Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. With us this week, and boy, am I glad to see him, is Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, otherwise known as NYPIRG. Welcome, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Great talking to you.
Okay, so let's start. We all know that there was a siege at the Capitol. People of disrepute, in my opinion, were there, and they took over the Capitol. What implications does that have for New York State?
Well, it was hard not to be in a rage after watching what happened at the Capitol, at the national Capitol. And by the way, at the state Capitol, there was a rally and a fight, and two people were stabbed. So I think it's a disturbing time for sure, because it was an attempted coup. It was really more than a siege. It was part of an overall strategy I think the president had, to undermine the elections and to use mob power to overturn the result. And unfortunately, it plays out in New York in different ways. One is this sort of allowance that the president's had to just consistently lie and mislead his supporters and advance insane ideas about the elections and what's going on in the country, creates more space for bad behavior by elected officials all across the country. In addition, I think if you're a Republican in New York, it's a daunting time, because if you believe in the rule of law, you have to be at odds with the president, and yet the president is still enormously popular with Republicans across the country and in New York. And so that puts them between a rock and a hard place. Of course, you want people to act based on their conscience and what on the rule of law, and you've seen that happen with some of the members of Congress in the impeachment vote. But it's a bad time for America, which means it's a bad time in New York.
Now, the FBI has come forward with some advisories saying that not only are many of these miscreants coming back to the Capitol on Inauguration Day and before, but they're coming to the state capitals. Do you think that our governor in New York, Andrew Cuomo, and others, other governors, Governor Baker in my state of Massachusetts, do you think that they're preparing so that there will not be the same kind of affect that there was in Washington?
Well, in the case of the Washington coup attempt, I don't think we even know the full story. And to me, it's amazing that this huge rally was occurring. The president had been organizing it for months, and they don't have enough security for the nation's capital. It makes you feel that either it's unbelievable level of incompetence, or the members of the Capitol Police were part of the conspiracy. So I think at the state level, in Massachusetts, New York, Vermont, other states, they know what's coming, or they know what potentially is coming, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be prepared. And so I think the problem you have is you don't really know what's going to happen. Once you let loose the dogs of war, you can't call them back. And there are lots of people now, many of whom are armed to the teeth, that are unhappy and are, their minds are filled with the lies of the president or their own ideologies. And I think we're going to be dealing with potential right-wing violence for, some time. And it won't just be a one and done when the inauguration happens next week. I think we're going to be dealing with domestic terrorism for a while, sadly.
If you were Andrew Cuomo, and I know you're not, although you did work for him briefly, and you knew that people were coming with guns to the Capitol, would you order your state police to shoot to kill?
They are empowered to do that depending on the circumstances now. And so, we don't know what's going to happen. And, it's hard to game every single thing out. But Certainly, you want to have as much governmental caution when it comes to confronting people, because certainly you don't want innocent people to get hurt. You don't want even guilty people to get hurt if you can do it. I think it's really important that there be a reasonable expectation that bad things can happen during the inauguration and for days and weeks after, maybe months after. And so it's going to take the extreme competence of the state police, as well as local enforcement, to make sure that we're prepared to protect government buildings, government officials all across the state, both in New York and other states as well. I mean, this is a real problem, and there are a lot more people involved in the right-wing extremism in the United States than there ever was pledging allegiance to ISIS, for example. And I think it's going to take an enormous amount of resources and concentration to prepare for it. And so people, law enforcement across the country is going to have to raise their game.
Now, law enforcement, as you say, is an interesting suspect in all of this, because there are many people who will tell you that there were cops there as part of the crowd that took over the Capitol, that there's a natural propensity for some police officers to be right wing. Do you think Cuomo has any problem with that in his own state police?
There's no way for me to know. I mean, obviously, there has been, it appears to be, from everything I've read, a deliberate strategy on the part of these extremists to infiltrate law enforcement across the country. And so, I mean, it's clearly something that people would have to be sort of paying attention to. But, again, I have not read anything or seen anything that alleges that that's occurred with the New York State Police, or, for that matter, for the Massachusetts State Police. There have been instances, though, and those people, where the allegedly New York City cops were involved in the effort down in Washington, as well as others from across New York State were involved. Yeah, I mean, this is a real problem, and, this is not my area of expertise. I'm just reacting, as I think any American should, which is with horror that this has occurred, with rage toward the president for making it happen, and with concern that there are not enough elected officials that are reacting to. I mean, the impeachment vote while there were more Republicans voting for impeachment than there have been, from other members of the party against incumbent presidents in the past, it's sort of astonishing to me that a call for an insurrection against the government of the United States is not an impeachable act in 100% of the minds of elected officials. And it's very concerning to live in a country where this kind of behavior is tolerated, even in the slightest.
Blair Horner, you're the director of NYPIRG, of course, New York Public Interest Research Group. A lot of young people, college students and others, who support NYPIRG. You get around. What are you hearing young people saying about what's going on right now?
Well, right now we're in the winter break, right? So my experiences are with a relatively small number of college students that are involved in various activities, and they have a similar reaction to it, at least the ones that I talked to, that I have. There are the additional sort of twist in it, and it's legitimate, is they're just shocked that the police presence and the police reaction at the coup attempt in Washington stands in such stark contrast to what they saw with the Black Lives Matter protests in reaction to the deaths of George Floyd and others. And they believe, right. I mean, there's some sort of double standard in terms of preparation. Now, the question of why that's the case, I think, is something that the Congress has to look at. I mean, if there was, in fact, an effort by the administration to squash preparation for what was going on, what was going to happen in Washington, I think that's a legitimate thing. And I think that the country deserves a 9/11 commission-style commission to look at right-wing extremism, not only in terms of the coup attempt, but what's going on across the country. I mean, there have been reports on this going back now easily 10, 20 years. I mean, Timothy McVeigh happened during the Clinton administration. And so this growing problem in America has at least come to a head right now, and I think the nation has to respond to it. Young people get that, but what I hear more is their sort of stunned disbelief in terms of the reaction to the security reaction to that event in Washington compared to the events in protest organized around Black Lives Matter in other events across the country previously. And the photographs are obvious. These are the Black Lives Matter events in Washington. The security presence was significant and dramatic. In this case, it was paltry at best.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Mayor de Blasio says, I'll have a piece of that. And they cancel New York City, as we speak, cancels all its contracts with the Trump Organization, things that they were running. Obviously, this is not the totality of Trump's wealth. But what do you make of that move?
Yeah, I feel somewhat, again, I don't know all the details. I wasn't involved in the decisions. It's not something that we were studying. But, I mean, there is a distinction, I think, between the individual who's president of the United States and his business enterprises. And so there should be some rationale as to why, not just to punish the president. I think the appropriate way to deal with the president is what the Congress has done and what law enforcement, so the District of New York, the Manhattan DA, the New York State Attorney General, to pursue any evidence of criminality or wrongdoing on his part or his company's part. I think that's a more appropriate venue for that. That's why you have laws and you have law enforcement officials, is to investigate and appropriate bring charges against people who have misbehaved. That applies to the president as of 12:01 p.m. on January 20th.
Do you think de Blasio has a political future based on the fact that he's not very popular in New York City, and I don't know where he goes? You know, mayors and ex-mayors in New York don't do that well.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's sort of, there's no real good history of anyone moving from New York City mayor to anywhere, certainly modern New York political history. Although, obviously, Ed Koch was very popular in the city and ran for governor, but he failed. And so and Mayor Lindsay before him was considered presidential timber. He never went anywhere. Mayor Bloomberg made an ill-fated effort for the Democratic presidential nod this time. So I don't know what he does. Time's not up yet, right? I mean, he's mayor until the end of this year. So we may get a better sense of that as, you know, time rolls on. But he's term limited out. I don't think there's any stomach among the members of the city council to change that like they did for Bloomberg. And so I think that, you know, he's done, certainly, at the end of his calendar year, and what his future is, you know, who knows? I mean, he's obviously a successful enough politician to get elected mayor of one of the biggest cities in America and one of the super cities on the planet. And so that's nothing to scoff at. But, you know, time will tell.
Meanwhile, back at the legislative ranch and the gubernatorial ranch, the governor of New York has given a tripartite plan for what he intends to do as governor this year. Can you catch us up on some of that?
You know, this governor has dealt with the state address, has always tried to do it differently than his predecessor. Up until Cuomo became governor, the state of the state address was the first day of the legislative session, and it was delivered. In the assembly chambers, and that's the way it had been for decades prior to that. This governor has changed that dramatically. He's not gone to the assembly chamber. He typically has it with the visuals to sort of help deliver the message. And like his predecessors, he's rolled out proposals in advance of the State of the State to get as much good press as possible going into the budget. This year, he's delivering four State of the State addresses. In advance of his budget, and the budget comes out, we expect, next week, and that will be where the bad news is going to come out, because balancing the budget under the circumstances of the virus and the pandemic, as well as the state itself, is not going to be a pleasant document, is my guess.
Blair Horner, we heard that we were 16, in New York State, we were $16 billion in the hole. Now we're hearing a much lesser number, like $8 billion. What's the truth of it?
Yeah, I mean, the budget deficit, the governor talks a lot about it and has put out annual numbers of somewhere in the $15 billion range over the next 4 years, which has been echoed by Comptroller DiNapoli. Some of that is, you know, based on projections. It makes sense from the governor's perspective to want to have as big a number out there as possible because he's trying to get the Congress to bail out the state. And with a new Senate Majority Leader from New York, Chuck Schumer, you know, that's what U.S. Senate Majority Leaders typically do, is they deliver for their home states. And so the governor may be right in his optimism. But the state's, you know, deficit is also a function of what's happened. And so this year, the governor's office has withheld, they said, enormous amounts of money from spending on programs in New York, even for financial aid, for example, in colleges. And so will those cuts stay in place? Will the state borrow money, and when does it pay it back? I mean, those are variables that drive the deficit for the state up or down. There have been estimates that have come out from, for example, the Empire Center, which has been much more optimistic, I guess, right? Depends how you look at it, in terms of the deficit projections for the past year, and they are estimating that the budget deficit will be much smaller. So again, we'll see what the governor has to say next week, and we'll see what the Congress does under the new Biden administration in the next few months.
And how is the governor getting along and playing with State Comptroller DiNapoli, who Cuomo has not always been very kind to? But as a keen observer of the political scene, they seem to be getting along now, don't they?
Well, the Democrats rule the roost now in New York. There hasn't been a statewide elected official from the Republican Party. It's one since 2002. We're going on, it'll be two decades since that's happened. New York is increasingly blue, and the failed Trump administration is, cinder block around the neck of the Republicans as they try to run for office in New York. His president's very unpopular. But so there seems to be less tension. But the DiNapoli's job, though, is to be the watchdog of the state's finances, and the governor manages the state's finances. And so the Constitution, because they're separately elected officials, the Constitution wants that tension to be there. And so there was a lot of tension in the first couple terms of the Cuomo administration because DiNapoli, the governor wanted to pull back DiNapoli's powers to oversee the state's economic development efforts. And the theory was, on the governor's part, that he wanted to move fast to get economic development jump-started. That hasn't worked out. There's been an agreement between the two of them to give the comptroller some, if not most, of his powers back to monitor what's going on with state finances. So there seems to be a truce. I'm not part of the team, either team. So whether or not there's more to it than that, I don't know. But I agree that there seems to be a truce. And the comptroller's job, though, is to be monitoring the state's finances and to let the public know what's going on within the government. And I think it's critically important that that job be done because there have been scandals in the Cuomo administration because of the failure to adequately oversee the state's economic development efforts. And so that doesn't make any sense. And that's DiNapoli's job, is to ferret that stuff out.
I do take some issue with you, Blair Horner, when you talked about a truce. A truce would imply that two people had a say. I've always thought that Cuomo, who I like on many levels, was bullying DiNapoli, and DiNapoli wasn't in a position to truce or not.
Well, I don't mean it in a term of a personality way. There is supposed to be a tension between them. Right. And that tension, I hope, continues to exist. But it doesn't appear, at least at the public surface, looking at it, that there are efforts by the Cuomo administration to pull back the powers of the comptroller like there had been. And so that's how I was defining truth.
Right. No, I get it, which in my mind was totally unnecessary. Now, up in the North Country, there's a congresswoman, and she's been a big supporter of Donald Trump. It is a somewhat purple district. They've had Democratic Congressman Bill Owens, a commentator for this station, had a couple of terms. Do you think she's made the right decision to continue to back Trump the way that she has?
I think there's different issues here. One is, if you're a conservative and you support the conservative policies of the Trump administration, that makes sense. But to adopt and to echo his lies about the election, I think is wrong because it creates the echo chamber that helped stimulate people, thousands of people, to go to Washington, in part that started a riot and then a coup attempt against the government of the United States. And then to objectively see that happen and not and then to vote to overturn the put the pause button on the results of the election anyway, I don't think that's defensible. I also don't think it's defensible not to have voted to impeach. And what else could happen? what's the standard by which you want to impeach a president other than reacting to the charge of stimulating an insurrection against the government of the United States? I mean, what else does it take to do that? And so, I mean, the congresswoman has to explain that to her constituents. That's her job. I'm not a partisan in terms of, you know, Democrats versus Republicans or purple versus green or blue or red. But I'm just amazed that you can objectively look at the facts, echo lies, and then not understand the implications of what has just happened and not sanction the president for doing it. There's no dispute. I mean, he was the one who was telling people to go to Washington months in advance. He goes to the rally and tells them to march on the Capitol. There's not enough security in place. And what happens? You know, the most militant elements of that mob storm the Capitol, and people end up dead. And so to me, it's just an incredible, I'm still in a rage and in shock that this has happened. And I think it's indefensible not to make Trump pay for that in the political arena through impeachment.
Are we going to see a rise in taxation in New York State? And so where would the lines of demarcation be? You know, tax the wealthy is one thing. Billionaires, half billionaires, 100,000, 50,000, you know, it always starts big and then it ends up hurting the guy in the barrel. What do you think?
That is the muscle memory. I mean, the political elite is always going to look for the path of least resistance when it comes to inflicting pain on people. And so they don't want to do cuts and they don't want to do tax increases. And yet they have a multi-billion-dollar deficit of some number. They are going to be looking to hope that the Congress, you know, shovels in some money, the economy recovers, and somehow they can nickel and dime their way out of it. That's the muscle memory. And usually the nickel and diming come out of the pockets of the middle-class New Yorkers. Again, we don't know how this is all going to play out. But it seems from our perspective, that if you're going to have to deal with a large budget deficit, if that's the case, that the people who have the most resources and who have benefited during this time could be the people that pick up the tab, not the people who have had to work through the pandemic and then face the possibility of having services that help them get cut, education, healthcare, whatever. And so that to us seems like a priority. And Wall Street's been cooking very much. It's over 30,000 points. It's incredible, actually. Why not, you know, impose a sales tax on the buying and selling of those stocks like we do for everything else? And that would generate billions of dollars for the state. So that to us would make more sense than cutting programs and nickel and diming and saying you're going to put, you know, you're going to allow sports betting and marijuana recreational and put a sales tax on, which all, you know, may make sense. But those are programs that don't even exist. How can you police a budget on revenues from those?
You know, Blair, when I've asked the governor about that, he starts talking about the stock market moving to another state. And it's clear there's some real dissonance between the governor on this and the two legislative leaders in the Senate and the Assembly. I'm not so sure Cuomo isn't pretty happy to let them do all the heavy lifting and to object to it and blame them and get the benefits.
No, I mean, you know, again, we talked before about the institutional tension between the comptroller's office and the governor's office. There is supposed to be tension between the legislative branch and the executive branch. The legislature is bound by the Constitution to act as a check and balance on the executive. But that's what they should do. If the governor creates a budget that forces them to, you know, make the tough decisions on taxation, so be it. I mean, the tough issue, that's why they get elected to be, you know, that's why they're elected officials. Their job is to the greatest extent possible, solve the problems of our society that can't be solved on an individual basis.
Yeah, but on a political
budget is the real deal.
Yeah, but on a political basis, you know, it seems to me they're walking into, the legislative leaders are walking into a little bit of a trap here. They will do what will save the governor and the budget, but he'll get to say, I told you not to do that. So that's where I think we are. Let me ask you a couple of real fast questions. You've called for voter reform, But I've often said that even though the Democrats control everything, the Democrats are incumbents too. So if you don't get it, it won't be for any other reason that they don't want it. They got there under the old system.
No, look, I mean, it's always hard to ask the winners of the game to change the rules. But, you know, New York State had real problems. People stood online for hours to do early voting. There are constitutional impediments to our way, the way that New York allows people to register and vote in New York. Those things have to be fixed. New York has definitely improved over the last 2 years in its elections administration, but it's still below the average in the country. And the state should do better. And I think there's an opportunity to do that this year.
Higher ed, are the public colleges and universities in trouble because of the pandemic, or is it just the private colleges, which we keep hearing about?
Well, the small private colleges are definitely teetering, but the community colleges are too. Normally, when the economy tanks, community colleges do well, but you're not seeing that, at least not yet. And we're very concerned when you look at the trends at the community colleges and the state university in particular, that they're in bad shape, and the state has been pulling back resources for a long time now, and it may be that some of them can't survive.
Let's talk very quickly about the census. Obviously, New York may lose a couple of congressmen if it doesn't go well. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, at least one, maybe two members of Congress in New York State will lose. There's 430 members of Congress. Every 10 years, the census comes out, and the political boundaries of the states change, not the geographic political boundaries. And so when they reapportion the number of those 435 members of the House to each state, it's based on population. New York is stagnant population. It'll lose one, maybe two. And it's where the population losses really occur are in upstate. So I think that the upstaters are going to feel the political pain more than downstate.
With that, I have to say, and I'm sad about this, we're out of time. Our guest has been the amazing Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Group, otherwise known as NYPIRG. Blair, you are always here for us, and we are incredibly appreciative. So thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.